Radio Prague News. President Miloš Zeman has said he will name Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka Prime Minister next Friday. The head of state voiced objections to a number of ministerial nominees, but said a new government could be in place by the end of the month. And the Social Democrat leadership is against making changes to the proposed government lineup to accommodate the president. President Miloš Zeman has announced he would appoint Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka Prime Minister next Friday. At a press briefing in Prague, the president said Mr. Sobotka had fulfilled the task set, which was to put together a government which would have a stable majority in the lower house. As regards the appointment of the new government, Mr. Zeman said he believed this could take place by the end of January, on condition that the lower house approved the draft civil service law in its first reading. This particular condition was given in view of the fact that the nominee for finance minister, ANO leader Andrej Babiš, has been unable to produce a clean screening certificate, proving that he did not actively collaborate with the communist secret service. The new civil service law, which is expected to replace the screening law, would not address the issue. The president cited objections to several ministerial nominees, such as not being properly qualified for the job or getting a suspect fast-track law degree at the Pilsen Faculty of Law within just 9 months, which refers to the nominee for Interior Minister Milan Chovanec. Mr. Zeman said he hoped the Prime Minister-in-waiting would address his objections. The leaders of the emerging coalition government have welcomed the president's announcement. ANO leader Andrej Babiš said it was good news for the whole country that a government could be in place by the end of the month, and said he was certain his party's nominees would convince the president in due time that they were up to the tasks ahead. Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka said the president was fully entitled to make known his objections to some of the nominees, but he said he did not consider these objections serious enough to warrant a change of plan. Pavel Bielobrádek of the Christian Democrats welcomed the president's intention to meet with all ministerial nominees in person. The Social Democrat leader called a meeting of the party's leadership on Friday for a debate on the present political situation. The meeting focused on the president's objections to a number of ministerial nominees. Lubomír Zaorálek, who is nominated to the post of foreign minister in the nascent government, said the president's stated reservations were petty and did not justify making changes to the government lineup. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has sent the Czech Foreign Ministry a diplomatic note in which it says the 12 weapons found by police on the embassy's premises had never been used and had merely been in storage on embassy grounds since the 1980s. The note does not say why they were never registered with the Czech authorities. Czech Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Johanna Grohová says the ministry does not find the explanation satisfactory and that by failing to register the weapons, the embassy violated Czech law. The Social Democrats and ANO of the emerging centre-left government said they will not use the threat of cancelling tax benefits for churches in order to get them to be more cooperative on the matter of church restitutions. The two strongest parties in the future government are critical of the church restitution law passed under the former centre-right government, and have appealed on church dignitaries to consider a less generous settlement that would not put so great a burden on the state budget. Lawyers have advised the country's future leaders negotiating the matter to use the threat of heavily taxing the money to be paid out as compensation for property that is not being returned and taxing the state contributions to churches, which are to be handed out for another 17 years before they become fully independent from the state. Doctors who removed a 36-kilogram malignant tumour from the stomach of a 47-year-old woman said the patient was recovering well and could be released from hospital within a week. During the 7-hour operation, doctors had to deal with severe bleeding, repeatedly giving the patient blood transfusions. Doctors say they will publish a report on the case, which is unique in this country, as far as they know, abroad as well. The chief surgeon said he could not understand why the woman had not sought treatment earlier and why the family had not responded adequately to her problem, since the weight of the tumour confined her to bed and she was unable to live a normal life. Finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The weekend should be clear to partly cloudy, with day temperatures reaching 7 degrees Celsius. I'm Danielle Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech president confirms he will appoint Bohuslav Sobotka prime minister next week. Then we'll have a roundup of the latest Czech business news, and later we take a closer look at the Festival of Iranian Films that's underway in Prague. All that and more coming your way, so please stay with us. President Miloš Zeman has confirmed he will appoint Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka prime minister next week, but questions remain over Mr. Sobotka's choice of ministers. In a rambling 40-minute televised news conference, President Zeman listed a number of objections to the proposed new cabinet, but suggested the new government could be appointed by the end of January. Rob Cameron has more.
President Zeman has finally ended weeks of speculation, announcing to the public that he will appoint Bohuslav Sobotka prime minister next Friday, January the 17th, in a ceremony at Prague Castle. In fact, what the president said was November the 17th, but let's assume this was a genuine mistake and not a nefarious plan to prolong the government of experts Mr. Zeman installed last summer. If, indeed, it was a mistake, then on Friday, a record 83 days after the ballot boxes were sealed, Mr. Sobotka will become the 11th Prime Minister since the Czech Republic became independent in 1993, succeeding the technocrat leader Jiří Rusnok. The Social Democrat leader had, said Mr. Zeman, fulfilled the sole criterion laid before him, presenting him with a signed proof that his new coalition government will command a convincing majority in Parliament. For a few days, maybe weeks, maybe longer, after Mr. Sobotka's appointment, the country will find itself in the curious constitutional no-man's land of simultaneously having two prime ministers, Bohuslav Sobotka, the prime minister-designate without an appointed cabinet, and Jiří Rusnok, the interim prime minister, who does have a cabinet, albeit one that's governing in an acting capacity since resigning in August. As to who will replace them, here Mr. Zeman left room for varying interpretations. At 4 o'clock on Friday, Mr. Sobotka was due to visit Prague Castle with the original signed coalition agreement and the official list of ministers. Mr. Zeman, without naming names, told reporters he had objections to a number of them. Those objections ranged from one minister's missing security clearance, another's studies at the now discredited law faculty of Plzeň University, and another's absolute lack of expertise in his given ministry. And the president hinted he was willing to reject Mr. Sobotka's cabinet proposals if consensus couldn't be found, even if most constitutional experts agree his power of veto is, in fact, limited and would almost certainly be challenged in the Constitutional Court. But Mr. Zeman showed no signs of being cowed by the prospect. A proposal is not something you automatically have to accept, he said. If that were the case, it would have interesting consequences for business and indeed marital relations.
Rob Cameron reporting. But now Chris Johnstone joins me in the studio with the latest news from the world of Czech business.
The Czech Republic is seeking to seduce one of the world's biggest producers of electric cars to site its first European factory in the country. The state agency for encouraging inward investment, Czech Invest, said it's already preparing its courtship of US-based Tesla Motors. The California company produces around 500 cars a week in the States. And although electric cars are still expensive, many states and countries are increasingly offering tax and other incentives to get drivers to switch from polluting petrol and diesel.
Sharp rises in the incentives offered to employers creating new jobs in the country's worst unemployment black spots have been approved by the government. Maximum incentives proposed have been quadrupled to 200,000 crowns for regions where the jobless total is half as high again as the national average. One of the conditions attached is that the new jobs last for at least 5 years. The biggest beneficiary from the change should be the Moravian Silesian region, where more than 1 person in 10 has no job.
Record low interest rates encouraged Czechs to rush into signing home loans last year. The total volume of loans in 2013 reached 155 billion crowns. This is the highest level since the housing boom 7 years ago. Refinancing of existing loans increased significantly and accounted for around a third of borrowing. This is a sign that Czechs are increasingly at ease shopping around for the best loan deals.
One of the country's big three brewers, Budějovický Budvar, says it produced more beer in 2013 than at any time over its 118-year history. Production rose by 6.2% compared with 2012. Beer sales abroad reached record levels, helping to make up for a difficult domestic market. Figures from the Czech Beer and Malt Association for the first 10 months of 2013 show Czech beer output down by 1.5%, but export 4.6% higher.
But there's bitter news for multinational Heineken's bevy of Czech breweries. They have lost the exclusive right to use the Radler name for popular mixes of beer and lemonade after a ruling by a state office. Heineken argued it had sole rights after registering the name in 2001. Some of the local brewers forced to drop the Radler name by Heineken are now seeking damages from the Dutch-based multinational.
Thank you, Chris Johnstone, for that. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. A festival of Iranian films held in Prague this week brings over 24 feature films, shorts and documentaries to audiences in the Czech capital. Entitled Iran, A Different Reflection, the third edition of the festival focuses on contemporary Iranian cinema, featuring films such as The Past by the Oscar-winning director Asghar Farhadi and A Cube of Sugar, the country's official candidate for this year's Academy Awards. The film A Modest Reception was screened on the festival's opening at Prague's Světozor Art Cinema on Wednesday night. A gripping road movie, it follows a couple travelling in the snowy mountains of western Iran with a trunk full of money that they randomly give away to people they meet on the road. A study in the power of money and the uneasiness that can arise when giving and accepting, Modest Reception was introduced by its director, screenwriter and star, Mani Hagigi.
This film has been traveling the international festival circuit now for over a year, and people seem to think that it's a film about... you would think that they would say something like it's a film about money or some kind of an economic class struggle or things like this, but that's not been the case, fortunately. People think of it in terms of a film about honor and making promises that you have to keep and the pressure of charity, how charity is a two-faced kind of practice. On the face of it, it seems like a goodwill mission or something like that. But it can have a dark side, and the emergence of that dark side is what makes the whole thing dramatic.
Do people in Iran see it in a similar way? I mean, are the audiences, do they find similar things as audiences in Western film festivals?
More or less, yes. I mean, there are sort of universal themes explored in this film that apparently people have similar reactions to, but different cultures have reacted also differently to this film. The most amazing reaction was from the Swiss, actually. We have a Swiss distributor in the film, and when the film was released in Switzerland, as you know, money is a big, sort of not only a big theme in Switzerland, but also a big problem, apparently. I didn't know this before, but when I went there to promote the film, it seems like the film was sort of speaking to the Swiss soul in a very particular way. And when I asked the audience why were they so affected by this film in particular, it turns out that with all the dirty money stored in Swiss banks and all the interest sort of from that money driving the Swiss economy, the Swiss seem to have some kind of a very peculiar relationship to the idea of having money. That led to an interesting discussion in Switzerland. Other cultures have a different... I mean, for the other place that was very interesting was India, for exact opposite reasons. In Switzerland, the audiences seem to be thinking of themselves as the two protagonists of the film. In India, people were thinking of themselves as the recipients of the other characters in the film. So with each culture, you know, it's sort of the focus of attention shifts from character to character, and that's what makes it very interesting.
In your film, you touch upon several sort of sensitive issues, yeah. Crossing the border illegally, the smuggling of drugs and alcohol into Iran. Didn't you have problems getting this through into the movie and released in Iran?
Yes, I had a lot of problems. When the film was first finished and presented to the censorship board, we were asked to cut out 35 minutes of the film. Fortunately, there's a culture of, after 35 years, there's a culture of negotiation with the censorship board. And we've become quite adept at doing this. So I was asked for, you know, a revision of this, and which involves a face-to-face discussion with a member of the censorship board. So having been given that opportunity, I managed to convince them scene by scene why every single point that they made was misunderstood by them. And in the end, we had actually had to cut out more or less only 6 seconds of the film. So, yeah, we had problems, but we solved them.
What was on the screen for those 6 seconds that you had to cut out?
Yeah, the 6 seconds that were cut out was at the end of the film where these motorcyclists come to take all the money away. The huge number of them had to be reduced. So it's actually hundreds and hundreds of motorcycles in the initial. And you saw this long shot of them just coming like, you know, Mongolian invaders from out of the mountains or something. And that seemed to kind of really upset the authorities for very specific cultural reasons that are very hard to explain to you. But we agreed to sort of cut out one shot that showed their entirety. And so now the sense is that there's only like 20 or 30 of them.
Mr. Hagecki, you said you were glad that the ongoing Iranian Film Festival in Prague is focusing on current or contemporary Iranian cinema. How is it? How is the new wave or the current wave different from maybe 5 or 10 years ago?
I would say that primarily we have, you know, the new generation of filmmakers are focusing again on storytelling as their main tool for becoming, you know, getting the attention of the audience. So for the longest time, the minimalism that ruled over Iranian cinema really set aside narrative and plot devices and storytelling and sort of focused on emotions and a very minimalist, simple approach, which is the reason why they usually dealt with children and their simple worlds. After a while, that sort of became a tiresome thing, I think, for us. And now we're dealing with themes of, you know, middle class, urban living. We're dealing with marital problems. We're dealing with sort of adults and therefore more complicated worlds, which requires us to be better storytellers and sort of more suspenseful storytellers. So in a sense, we're moving away from that innocence, which became oppressive to us. And which was the face of Iranian cinema for so many years.
The theme of the third festival of Iranian films is Iran, a different reflection. The festival's artistic director and co-founder, Kaveh Danishmand, elaborates.
This whole idea was suggested by one of our very, very good friends and actually a member of our jury, Mrs. Zuzana Kshihova. She's an expert of Iranian literature. And she was actually saying that it's very nice to show some sort of image of Iran that you usually do not see on TV here, or you do not usually read on the papers here. So basically, we would show an image of Iran that is different, but it exists. So most of the films you see this year, they're taking place in urban environments. Some of them are even from some sort of a middle-class families or even upper-middle-class families. So basically, the image that you will see, first of all, it's very new compared to the last year, which was more or less like a review of the Iranian film history. And it's also bringing the images that are somehow even shocking. For some of the audiences, they were like, oh, we didn't know that Iran would look like this.
For the first time, the festival features a competition section with 7 films, including Iran's official candidate for the Best Foreign Language Oscar, A Cube of Sugar by Reza Mirkamiri. Other films featured in this section are The Wedlock by Ruhollah Hejazi and the movie Parviz by the director Majid Barzagar. Mr. Danishmand explains why the festival decided to introduce a competition this year.
Honestly, I have to say that for us, it's a very, very good excuse to acknowledge the Iranian filmmakers who are making films under very certain conditions in Iran. In one sense, we wanted to put a team of jury together that come from different fields. Plus, we wanted to have our audience really involved in the festival, because that's why the festival exists. We have this amazing audience who would come to watch the films, and we want them to be a part of the festival, not just the clients to the festival, but actually a part of the whole team of the festival. So we wanted to get them involved, and we also wanted to acknowledge the Iranian filmmakers. We just wanted to find a very good excuse to thank them for what they are doing at this moment in Iran.
The festival's jury consists of former artistic director of the Karlo Bivari International Film Festival, Eva Zaralová, expert on Iranian literature, Zuzana Křihová, Spanish filmmaker Diego Fandos, and the director Maniha Gigi. His movie, Modest Reception, is one of 2 feature films shown at the festival out of competition, the other being The Past by Oscar-winning director Ashgar Farhadi. The festival also offers more than 12 documentaries and short films. The event's artistic director Kaveh Danishman says that in his opinion, one documentary in particular stands out.
This year we have the screenings also in Bio Oko, which is our immense pleasure to have them involved in the festival too. We have a very special title in Bio Oko called My Name is Negat Arjamali and I Make Westerns. You know, that's the very famous sentence by John Ford saying, my name is John Ford and I make Westerns. And it's a very amazing film. Me as an Iranian filmmaker, when I watched it myself, I was surprised. Like, I cannot believe this. So I can imagine that if Czech people see that film, they would be extremely surprised about what they are going to expect. It is about a person who is making films under very, very strange circumstances in a village in Iran. And I would say that that's our most special film of the year, in my opinion.
The festival runs in the Svetozor and Bio Oko cinemas in Prague until Sunday. More details can be found at iranianfilmfestival.cz. That edition of The Arts was the final part of our program today. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz. You can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can easily get in touch. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.